Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Agile Uprising podcast. I'm Colleen Johnson, and today we're joined by our guest and my dear, dear friend, Melissa Boggs, Chief Scrum Master of the Scrum Alliance. Hi, Melissa.
Hi, Colleen. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're so excited to have you here. I'm so excited to talk about what you have going on at the Scrum Alliance. I think you've got a lot of cool things to share about the last year and kind of what's ahead for Scrum Alliance. I feel very lucky that a lot of what's going on for SA is happening right here in my backyard in Colorado. So we'll get to that part here in a minute. But I want to start off by talking about you and your role there. As I said in the introduction, you are the Chief Scrum Master. I know that was a decision that Scrum Alliance made about a year ago. What was the drivers for changing the organization structure for Scrum Alliance?
So admittedly, a little bit of this is secondhand for me because it kind of unfolded, obviously, prior to my being there. But sort of as the story goes, Scrum Alliance has had a bit of a revolving door of leadership over its long tenure. I couldn't tell you exactly the number, but there has been more CEOs and or managing directors, it's been called that at one time, than there have been years. So, you know, it's been a challenge for Scrum Alliance to find the right leadership for that kind of quote unquote top position in the organization. And about a year and a half ago, they were in the middle of like a very intense CEO search with an executive search, you know, executive recruiting firm. And they just still weren't really finding what they were looking for. You know, they needed people who had this business acumen, but also who demonstrated the values of the organization. And that sometimes requires like non-traditional thinking. So, you know, a lot of these candidates that were coming through that were incredibly qualified to be CEOs didn't necessarily demonstrate, you know, this non-traditional agile thinking. So around September of 2018, they were interviewing Howard Sublett, who is my counterpart, my peer, and decided that while he was a really good candidate, they didn't want to go the CEO route. And they started talking about like, how do we best demonstrate principles and practices of Scrum through this organization? So they ended up asking him if he would be interested in serving in a chief product owner role with the intention of finding a chief Scrum Master. And so he accepted. And from that point, they announced him, and then they started looking for his counterpart. And yeah, I was fortunate enough to be considered and then offered the position. I'm really proud of the board. Again, I wasn't there at the time, but I'm really proud of like the decision to wholly embrace the things that we say are important for other organizations to embrace.
Yeah. And so that decision to create the Chief Scrum Master and Chief Product Owner role, you said replaced the role of a CEO. Do you or Howard or you together have people who report to you?
Yes, everyone. and because about a year ago, I had been in my role for about 3 months at the time, we made a big decision ourselves to really change the structure of the organization and flatten it. And so mid-April of last year, we went through a self-selection workshop where everyone in the organization actually chose what team they were going to be on under this new structure. And we removed the notion of managers. So we have very little hierarchy. We have very flat structure. We have now 7 interdisciplinary Scrum teams, and each one has a product owner and a Scrum Master, neither of which have people authority. You know, they have very traditional Scrum roles with their teams. And a lot of the things that you would think about in terms of manager authority this is not perfect yet. We're still working on it, but we're finding ways for teams to take that responsibility and accountability for each other. And that is a very difficult thing to do, you know, to build structure and process around that, but not too much. So in a sense, everyone reports to us, but at the same time, we are continually trying to find ways to push that authority back down.
That's amazing. And you said that you're working on it. I know you mentioned it's been about a year since that this reorg first took place. It sounds like it's iterative and you're folding in learnings in the very scrum and agile fashion. What would you say are some of the biggest things that have surprised you about this structure over the course of the last year?
So I'll actually start with something that surprised, I think, Howard and I both about our own leadership. That was a result of the structure, but really had more to do with how we lead. I think that we, in the beginning, were so intent on proving that we didn't want to be command and control that we actually almost went too far the other direction. And by that, the funny thing is, I used to teach, you know, an agile leadership class, and I would always tell leaders, like, you can't just put your people in a canoe and push them into the ocean when it comes to self-organization. They may have no idea how to make some of these decisions. And that's exactly what we did. Like, I think we went too far in the other direction in terms of pushing that authority down is really important, but also equipping people to not only make the decisions, but feel comfortable in those decisions and not fearful of those decisions. And that comes with creating really clear constraints and being okay with anything that happens in those constraints. So, you know, I've used the example before of, like, if you have to make the constraint between 2 and 5, just so that you know that anything that happens between 2 and 5, I'm totally cool with that. I'm going to be excited about it, proud of it. If that's where you have to start, that's the fairest thing that you can do. And then when they do, you know, really amazing things between 2 and 5, then you stretch it to 2 and 10. But you don't just start with, like, well, anything between 1 and 100, because it takes some time for the teams, leadership, and, like, alignment between the teams to find this, like, synchronicity. I think that's the right word. So, yeah, I think one of the things that surprised me the most was, in a way, how we kind of fell on our faces in that aspect and had to quickly kind of go, okay, like, how can we create safety for the team? And safety doesn't mean do whatever you want. Safety yeah. means here's the guardrails. And I think we're still working on that, frankly. But we're much more aware of it now and try to be cautious of it.
Do you, as an organization, do you publish anything around what you're learning and some of these things that you're talking about? Because it's something I think as coaches or consultants or internal scrum masters, I'm sure everybody's fervently nodding, like, yes, yes, we need, you know, we need some of that, right, of that structure and the box within to play in. How do you take what you're learning as an organization through what you're applying and pump that out for consumption?
So we actually have, a blog on our website called Agile Matters. And inside Agile Matters, there's, like, a series called Unscripted. And from the very beginning of this, I think I wrote my first unscripted blog in, like, my second week on the job. Howard and I set out from the very beginning to kind of chronicle this journey. And so we've done that through a series of blogs that we've written. We do Facebook Live quite a bit, and then we'll link those videos from the Agile Matters blog. And then anytime that we're on a podcast, like this one, where we're specifically talking about the organization, so, and about the structure and the design, then we'll link those too. Not all of them, but just the ones where we're kind of talking about this journey. And it's funny because, you know, we've done that for others, but also it's just so useful to look back and see for ourselves the journey that we've been on and kind of how far we've come. Yeah,
that's amazing. Do you, you know, as you're talking through this, do you think that there's opportunities to apply, I guess, not just the flat organization piece that you're talking about? I mean, I think we do see a lot of organizations trying that, whether they're successful or not, right? But trying to create a more flat org. But this opportunity to have a chief product owner and chief scrum master role, or just a shift in thinking around what we consider the typical leadership titles and roles. Do you think that what you guys are trying with Scrum Alliance could be applied in other businesses?
I think it could. I think that it definitely takes a lot of work because it is a constant shift of your own mindset. You know, Howard and I were both agilists to our core long before we came here. But when you're put in a position where you're sharing authority, you're sharing decision making, you're sharing all of it, right? Like anything that would be considered the CEO role, we're sharing that. And it has so many blessings. Like there's so much about it that is just so useful. Like I was just telling Howard yesterday that like I genuinely believe we would have not gotten half as far as we had on our own, either one of us, because we do focus on very different things. We can push things further at the same time, if that makes sense. But it's hard. I mean, it's really hard. One of the things that has been an aha moment for me about our roles, but I think I've actually kind of had this conversation with some of my Scrum Masters and product owners, is sometimes it's real easy to feel like the tension is between the two people, but actually we talk all the time about the inherent and healthy tension between a product owner and a Scrum Master. And so being super like hyper aware of that and going like, okay, my partner in this is doing his job, but I'm doing my job too. And that means that we're gonna, you know, like in a healthy way, butt heads a little bit. Like it's natural that advocating for the customer and wanting more is the product owner's job. The Scrum Master's job is to protect the team and help people understand, you know, what is useful interacting with the team. And so that has helped us both, I think, tremendously to look at it that way and go, okay, this tension is not between me and you. Just between my role and your role, we're both doing our jobs. How do we work this up? You know, so I mean, that's a long way of saying yes, but be prepared to put in the work. You know, we have a coach ourselves, just a relationship, an ORS coach who works with us on our relationship, which has been incredibly useful.
Oh my gosh, I think if you and Howard aren't already planning to turn that into your next conference talk, sign me up. I feel like, you know, what you just described is something, and I love the way that you said this, that I think that so many organizations feel like needs fixing, right? That tension and that conflict. And I think you see that in all parts of the business. I was on working with a client today that talked about that conflict between product and engineering, right? Of I want it all and I want it shiny versus I want it, you know, I want to use out of the box technology or whatever, right? Of some of the conflict there. And I really like the way that you phrase that of that's we're all doing the right thing when that conflict is present, right? If we try to smooth it out so that it doesn't exist, then kind of not doing our jobs anymore. So I'd love to hear you and Howard do a little like back and forth about that at some point. That'd be amazing.
We actually did just speak for the first time together about our story at the Business Agility Conference just before everything shut down. And it was pretty fantastic. Like, we both talk about this all the time, but generally it's separately, like, not on purpose. It's just, you know, we kind of divide and conquer. So it was a lot of fun to like go up there together and talk about this journey and kind of brag about our teams.
Yeah, I love it. Well, I want to switch gears a little and talk about your new space here in Colorado. You guys just built headquarters, right? It's Scrum Alliance headquarters in Westminster and had a big grand opening party. Is that right?
We did. We didn't actually build it, but we just moved into a new space that we're leasing. So a little bit of background. Scrum Alliance started in this small office in Westminster, and long before I was here, outgrew it. And so ended up having to have a second office in the same office park, but across the street. And we always joke that that might as well have been across the country, just the way that it felt, you know, being kind of split in half like that. In fact, Howard and I both had a desk in each office so that we would be reminded to kind of like go back and forth, both of us, and like see both sides of our team. I mean, it really might as well have been like New York to LA. And so we were absolutely over the moon to move everybody into one space. And ironically, it ended up being in the same office park. They had this incredible incredible loft office that they were actually having a hard time finding someone for it because it's very industrial and modern, and you kind of have to be a cool hip company to like want to be in there. And so we moved into that space first week of December, so right before the holidays, and then had a big, big open house again right before kind of COVID hit. So I'm actually really grateful that we managed to do that before. But yeah, we're very excited. I mean, we've had an office all along, but it was small. There was two of them. It wasn't super welcoming, not by anyone's fault, but it was just very office-y. And this new space is incredible. It is, as I mentioned, it's a loft. So the downstairs portion only houses two of our smaller teams, and the rest is community space. And when we were designing it, like, this is literally what we talked to the furniture designers about, was like, this entire space, we want this to feel like home for all of our agilists. We want, you know, a lot of our Scrum Alliance trainers and coaches travel a lot, and we want them to feel like when they're in Denver that they can just pop in and crash on a couch and pull out their laptop and work right alongside of us. And then there's this huge staircase that goes up into the upstairs portion where the rest of our teams are. And, you know, we did the best we could to kind of make it very open and very welcoming to teams, where they have, like, every team has their TV that has like their Trello board up on it, you know, just trying to make it a very home feeling for the people who are there every day and people that are going to drop it.
So are all of the Scrum Alliance teams located out of that office now?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the majority. We have five remote employees out of 56. You know, at one time, probably 5 years ago, Scrum Alliance actually didn't even have an office. Maybe it was more than that, 8 years ago. So some of our oldest employees are actually like in other states because that was a thing back then. But the rest of them, yeah, are in this office, or they were until they closed it.
So tell us a little bit about the space itself. I think one of the things that, you know, for folks that have been in this industry a long time, I feel like we've totally seen like the actual floor plans ebb and flow for what businesses want in terms of what we would all consider the right, and I'll air quote that, like the right agile space, right? I've seen offices with no cubes and desks that roll around, or no, even like no desks, everybody's floating. And I feel like more recently, it feels like the pendulum's kind of swung back the other way of people saying like, I actually need some walls and some, or the biggest headphones I can find to be able to get some heads down time and work. Like having that open floor plan is actually very distracting for certain people. What does your design look like, and what was your approach in picking that?
So upstairs, where the majority of the teams are, they do have cubicles. They are the low walls and like kind of the frosted glass. So, you know, you certainly have privacy, although they're not like the high cubicle walls, you know, of old. The teams are in, I don't know how to verbally describe this, but the teams are kind of like facing each other. So they're kind of enclosed. I think they call it bullpen style, where it almost makes like a rectangle. And then they actually have like a big long table in the middle between like two sets of cubes, so that if they needed to like just kind of turn around and have a quick powwow about something and like draw something out, they can kind of just turn and do that and not run to a conference room somewhere. Because we understand the part about like needing some heads down space, I was especially excited about the downstairs portion, because it's all like, it's couches, it's high back chairs. This sounds kind of silly, but it's what I picture in like some modern airports, where you've got this round table and the seats that kind of tuck in next to it, but you can pull them out and sit at the table. When we were working with the furniture people, I kept saying like, this space is community and creativity. So like, how can we make it feel very creative and like space to work together, but also space to kind of get away on your own if you needed to. So some of the chairs are like very high backed with almost sides to them, so that you can kind of, you know, or like a library. I'm just all these public places. So, it's a little bit of both. I mean, certainly the team space has an open floor plan feel to it. Another interesting thing about the teams upstairs is we have a concept of sister teams. So of our seven teams, most of them are kind of paired with another team whose primary focus, our teams are persona based. So those two personas are somehow connected or might have some overlap a little bit in their needs. And so these teams work more closely together than they might work with all seven teams at the same time. And so we also had to really design around making sure that those sister teams had individual team space, but they were close to their team, their sister team, so they could also kind of peek over the wall and still hear each other and things like stand up. Like if I can hear your stand up at my sister team, I might go, oh, hey, like we're working on something just like that. We should talk, That was another interesting thing to kind of work around, which is why two of our teams downstairs are both down there because they were sister teams and we didn't want them to get separated either. It was interesting. I frankly have never had occasion to design an office and make sure that it was all covered. And I'll say too, Howard did a lot of that as well. He's got a background in real estate, so he was very helpful, took the lead on a lot of the logistics of the move and of the furniture. So grateful for his partnership in that as well.
Awesome. And how about the community space? Like what kind of use are you seeing? Or I guess pre-COVID, what kind of use were you seeing and what kind of events were taking place there?
So it was only about 8 weeks from when we really got back after the holidays when COVID really hit. We have always hosted, or at least as long as I've been there, we've hosted Agile Denver North. And it was like one of my greatest joys of this new office was the first normal Agile Denver North meetup where they showed up at the new office and like their eyes were this big around because it was very different from, meeting in the old office. So we certainly we'll continue to support them and host them. When we had our big open house, it was really fun because a lot of them showed up for that. So it was a party. But certainly, I mean, we are looking to host more meetups as we can. We have two large training rooms upstairs. I say large, two medium-sized training rooms upstairs that will both hold a medium-sized class of maybe 20 to 22. And so we've already been talking with, different trainers about hosting them for a very nominal fee and, a much more flexible space than, say, using a hotel because we're happy for people to bring in their own food. And there's something really cool, especially for those classes, because our teams get the benefit of like meeting other Agilists. And then these folks coming in for class can kind of look around and go, oh, this is what an agile organization at least is striving to be and looks like. So we're pretty excited about that too. But we also are thrilled to have anybody stop by and just co-work with us. We've got plenty of space downstairs for people to just come and, like I said earlier, like bring your laptop and collapse on a couch and use our Wi-Fi and check out the vibe.
That's awesome. Well, and you mentioned that obviously all of your teams are working from home right now while we're all under the stay-at-home orders from COVID. What is one thing that has surprised you the most about this transition of all the teams going 100% remote with really no warning, right? It was just overnight.
Yeah. So, a little bit of context. We have actually worked from home on Fridays for as long as I've, since well before I started. Like that's just been a tradition. And so I do feel like we were somewhat uniquely equipped in that way that, any tools or any kind of norms that we needed, we had that on Friday. So that part made it easier for us. If anything has surprised me, I think it's been how connected our folks really have stayed. Like we have an incredible team member experience team, and their entire team is focused on, what is it like to work here and making it just the most joyful, prosperous, sustainable place to work. So they have been working overtime to do things like we have a weekly pub quiz at 4 p.m. on Tuesdays. I think it's now like 5 weeks in, in the making. And I'd say about half the company shows up every Tuesday. It's not always the same half, but about 25 people show up every Tuesday, and we have this hilarious, like, happy hour pub quiz. I was a little bit terrified the first week because we have worked incredibly hard for the last year to build this connection and this culture between these, 56 people, and I was terrified that it was all going to fall apart. Like, it was all going to slip through our fingers. And there's definitely sticky moments. I'm not going to gloss that over. Like, people start to tell stories about other people when you can't see them and when you're not with them all the time. So we are just as guilty of that as anybody. But I think through the last year, we've built tools and channels for us to kind of pull ourselves back from that and go, nope, this is not our story. This is not who we are. And so I think what surprised me is that, like, mostly the culture has held up and that we've leaned on our values and our tools to bring it back when it's starting to slip.
And I think that that's the hardest part. I can definitely relate to what you're saying around those stories that we create. I think they almost spin out of control too. The further, the more that connection kind of breaks down, right? It's easy to paint this picture in your head of what's taking place until you can kind of draw or connect the dots with what's going on for another person or another group. We all create stories, positive and negative ones, and it's easy, I think, to let those stories spin out. So that's great. I think it's
Yeah.
great to acknowledge that that's present for everyone.
We're all irritable right now.
Yeah.
And by all, I don't just mean all Scrum Alliance people, like everybody, my kids, it's hard to be a person right now. It's hard to be a
Was going to ask
human.
you that too. I know, we've known each other for a long time now and shared a lot of stories about not just working in the agile space, but working in the agile space and being working moms. Sometimes it's amazing and sometimes it's hard as hell. And I was going to ask, what would be your biggest piece of advice for moms right now during COVID? Tips for survival to not eat your children.
Right, so I have two. My first one would be patience and grace with yourself, with your spouse, if you have one, with your children, with your dog, with your cat, with everyone, but mostly with yourself, because literally nobody has ever been through this before, not like this. And then the second would be, it's really exhausting to be on Zoom calls all day. And all you want to do is, like, go cocoon in your, hide in your bedroom. But connection right now is more important than it's ever been. And even just you and I chatting for the, 10 minutes that we did before we actually got on the podcast was so good for my soul. And we have to make time to do that. We have to Zoom call each other, FaceTime each other, email or text, like, whatever it is that you can make work. But, find your other mom friends or even non-mom friends and just make space for that, because you've got to fill up in order to keep pouring out. You can't pour out an empty vessel.
Yeah, I feel that, and it's funny, I think right now it's been like a weird sense of, everybody's trying to, I think, create some of that connection, right? And you see friends you haven't talked to in 10 years doing Zoom calls, and part of me was like, I don't want to get on Zoom. Like you said, I've been on Zoom for 8 hours straight. Like, I have to mute every once in a while to go pee. Like, I can't
Yes.
on my computer. The last thing I want to do is hang out for an hour on my computer again instead of being with my family. But it is, I think, important to just have that connection and understand what you were saying, that this is hard and no one's done this before. And one of the podcasts we did towards the beginning of the stay at home orders, our friend Chris Merman and all of his infinite wisdom said, everybody's acting like this is just our stay at home orders, but no, like, no one's done this. No one's done this. No one's an expert in this. And I think that grace that you talked about and the humility of being able to say, like, I can't, it's something we all need to feel comfortable doing and giving to each other. So I love that.
Yeah, the other thing I'll add is that, like, the novelty is starting to wear off for everyone, right? Like, not that it was exciting or fun in the first 2 weeks, but it was new and there was this newness. But now I think we're starting to settle in, and there's positives and negatives to that. Like, that's when it could start getting easy to not take care of yourself as much. and to not reach out to people and to start just hiding. And it's maintenance. Like you have to keep that maintenance up.
Just like anything, right? Anything we do requires
Yes.
that maintenance, that cadence, and that routine. Well, we're nearing the end of our time, and I want to, normally at this point in our podcast, we give all of our guests a chance to talk about any upcoming events that they have. It makes me kind of sad to even say that, but I guess the flip side of that is, I know a lot of events are shifting to online, and Scrim Alliance is doing everything they can to support those online events. Can you tell us a little bit about where folks can find out more about those kind of opportunities right now?
Absolutely. So yes, we were one of the many who had to sadly cancel our New York gathering, which would have been next week. So in the wake of that, we wanted to help. So we have actually created on our website, there's a page called At Your Service. And the At Your Service page is all kinds of resources designed to help people at all junctures of the Agile journey right now with all different types of needs that you might have. So there are events listed on there, not just ours, but basically any events that we're hearing about. Like, doesn't matter what organization, we're linking to it. Online events, of course. Different articles that we're linking to that we think might be helpful. We're putting out a ton of content. Trying to think of what else. We have actually shifted our courses. So our certified Scrum Master, certified Scrum Product Owner, et cetera, also online. So, there's ways through At Your Service to find those courses as well. So yeah, I would go to our website, scrumalliance.org, and there's a link to At Your Service, and there's tons of resources there.
Melissa, I'm going to press pause in our recording. I've got a kid screaming. All right, sorry for our little hiccup there. I had to press pause on Melissa's recap of events and where to find them. True to form of working from home with kids, I had one crying and one screaming, and needed to just make sure all fingers and toes were still attached. So we're all good. Melissa, what's the best way for our listeners to get in touch with you?
So, two different ways. You can reach me by email at mboggs@scrumalliance.org. I am also addicted to Twitter, like I think the rest of the Agile community. So you can always find me on Twitter. I am actually at Hummingbird Agility, which is HMNGBIRD Agility. Yeah, so those are the two best ways to find me.
Awesome. Well, thank you again, Melissa, for coming on to talk with me tonight. If you enjoyed this episode, please give us a review, a rating, or leave comments on iTunes, Stitcher, or the podcast platform of your choice. That really helps others find us. If this is your first time tuning in, please consider subscribing to the podcast. And if you'd like to join the discussion and share your stories about COVID, kids, how you're surviving times right now, please join coalition.agileuprising.com. And finally, support from listeners like you help us cover our hosting and production costs. So see the show notes for details on how you can become a patron or adopt one of my children.
They're really cute.
Until next time, this is the Agile Uprising podcast, signing out.